Welcome to Our House, the only complete on-air resource for your home ownership needs. Now, here's the host of Our House, Peter Hunt.
Good morning and welcome to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. HuntRealEstate.com is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA here in Buffalo, Niagara, all across upstate New York, and even out to Phoenix, Arizona. And soon to be tied into Boston as well. Boston, Massachusetts, that is. Not our Boston here. The show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. Call Hunt Mortgage today, 633-3700. Ask one of our skilled mortgage consultants. We don't call them loan officers. First of all, I don't like the notion of an officer. We want to consult with you. We want to make sure that we provide you with the lowest rate and closing cost for your next home financing experience. And that's guaranteed only at Hunt Mortgage. And ask about one of our many exclusive programs, including our pre-purchase commitment that allows you at no cost or risk to effectively enter the market to find your next home with cash. There's an article in Buffalo News a couple days ago about how tight the market is here. I think it's a little bit different than might have been characterized there in that article, but nonetheless, inventory is tight, and if you find the home you want to make sure that you are as competitive as possible when you make your offer, and the best way to do that is to effectively offer the seller cash. And there's only two ways to do that, cash itself, and the other way is to have an actual mortgage commitment before you go in the door. And that's only available at Hunt Mortgage, 633-3700, and we'll provide you with personalized, customized, knock-your-socks-off service. So check out that low-rate guarantee. And don't forget about the first-ever 24/7, 365 real estate hotline, the Hunt Hotline, which gives you access to all available information about any property listed for sale here and all across upstate, and even out to Phoenix, Arizona. All you have to do is dial 716-631-4800, enter the street number of the house you want to know about, no matter whose listing it is. Hotline will prompt you with a choice of street names. Select the one you want. You'll hear a brief description, and then you'll be texted a link to a dedicated website on that property, all automatically and just that fast, faster than I can even say it. Any time in any market we serve on any listing, whether it's ours or any other broker's, doesn't matter. You drive by a sign, it's got 14 phone numbers and pictures of agents and all kinds of stuff on it. Forget it. Just dial 631-4800 and you'll get all the information you need. We have a very special show for you today, but before we get to that, I want to remind you that we are the official real estate and relocation provider for our hometown professional teams, the Buffalo Bills, Buffalo Sabres, and Rochester Americans. And we have in the studio for the gentleman that who actually is a competitor of our Buffalo Sabres in a way. And that, of course, is Jerry Jacobs, Jr. Welcome, Jerry. Yeah,
thank you, Peter. And I would point out the Buffalo Sabres are an important client as well.
So. I'm sure. And we'll get into that in just a minute. But before we get into that, I want to mention to our listeners that Mr. Jacobs is the co-CEO with his brother Lou of Delaware North. I think you are the largest private company in Western New York now?
It depends on how you count. You know, everyone's trying to be the largest. I'm not sure what that means, but
if you're not one, you're 1A. So you're right there. Anyway, tell us a little bit about Delaware North. This is a lot of people hear about it. Certainly, it's like a household name around here in Western New York. But give us a little idea how Delaware North came about.
Well, Delaware North was started by my grandfather and his two brothers. They sold peanuts outside of the downtown burlesque theaters, and that sort of initiated the business. There's all sorts of great stories about how they moved along. Grandpa was the youngest of three boys, and his two older brothers had gotten a contract to do the food in one of the burlesque theaters downtown. And they were looking for the cheapest labor they could find, and so there was their younger brother Charlie, and they brought him in. Now he was not old enough to be working, certainly not old enough to be in a burlesque theater. And so they said, look, wait until the lights go down, and then we're going to send you up to the upper level with a tray of candy, and we just want you to work that section. And so he went up, and he was working that section, and he tripped on the stairs. He fell, and he spilled all his candy, and he started to cry. And all of the patrons got around him, and they bought all his candy. They felt sorry for this kid. So he went down into the commissary and told his brothers what had happened. And they said, "Look, no big deal. Don't worry about it. Just go home." And tomorrow, come back and do that again. So there's from the very get-go, there was that sort of entrepreneurial drive.
Theatrics.
Yeah.
That's great. So that's a long way from where you are today, and it would take us probably a couple hours to go into great detail, but some of the highlights between that trip and fall and today.
Sure. So 1968, company was probably about $150 million business, and Grandpa died of a massive heart attack at his desk. Dad was working for him. He was in Colorado. We called in to check in. He'd just gone out to Centennial Racetrack and learned that his father had passed away. And Dad was 28 years old. He became the chairman, CEO of Delaware North pretty much at that point. My Uncle Max was involved, but he didn't stick it out. Over time, pretty much after Grandpa's death, the three boys bought out their three sisters, and then in the early 70s, Dad bought out his two brothers. And that is at the same time, right around when he went and bought the Boston Bruins.
So your dad was a very young man when he bought the Bruins.
Very young. He was... it's funny, we have these talks about entrepreneurs and what it is, an entrepreneur, and I think a lot of people have a notion that an entrepreneur is a risk taker, and they may well be, but they don't see it that way. Most entrepreneurs I know see that there's no way they can fail, and I think Dad's sort of got that attitude that if he works hard enough, if he pushes hard enough, he can make it happen, and he has. It's worked well for him. But we've gone through so many iterations. I want to say when I joined the company, we were in aluminum smelting and steel foundries and typographies, and we printed magazine. We did the in-flight magazine for Piedmont Air and Republic Airlines, and we had a business that shipped snow crab legs from Alaska down to Seattle, and we were all over the board. And then over time, we slowly, have kind of consolidated into a focus around the customer and become a customer-centric business, and we're a hospitality business, and that sort of guided us to where we are today, where we're, I think we'll do about $3.3 billion this year, and it's really all around hospitality and how we build a business, which is interesting because when I talk to potential clients, there's three ways to sort of parse our industry today. There's the companies that are the procurement companies, like Compass, where they make their money out of how they buy, and then the rebates they generate. So when they look at a new piece of business, they're really focusing on how they can feed it into their procurement system. Then there's companies like Aramark that are food service companies. So they're all about preparing and serving food. We're different in that we're a hospitality company. We start and finish with the customer. We focus on customer satisfaction as a key metric. And that's what drives our business. So it does differentiate us in our industry, and it's worked well for us. So
today, going from the $150 million to $3.3 billion, that's not incremental growth. That's what I would call meteoric growth, even over that period of time. And as we look at in our business, as we look at growth, there's only a few ways you can grow a business. One of the ways is through acquisition. Has that been a main strategy of yours, or has it been more organic than that?
Well, it's been a mix. Historically, it was largely organic. Of late, we've become more of an acquirer because we have the resources to acquire businesses. So we have been buying, component pieces of existing businesses. For example, in our gaming business, we acquire casinos, and in our lodging business, we acquire resorts. But we've also bought a company three, four years ago, Patina Restaurant Group, which is a whole company with a whole set of contracts and its own culture and its own expertise. And, that was a learning experience for us as well, as you're trying to integrate a piece of business like that. And the other real trick, Delaware North has had over the last 2.5 decades, we've shown what we call a CAGR, combined annual growth rate, of 10%, which means we double in size every decade. And the question is, how do you keep doing what you're doing and doing well while you get bigger and bigger? I mean, we're used to being able to go out and touch our clients and our customers, to be in the field, to be close with everybody. But when you got business in Australia, UK, you're in Singapore, and it's kind of hard to stay close to it. So how do you do that? That's been the real challenge of late. That's been really the work that Lou and I spent a lot of time on. And we're fortunate we've been able to get some great hires and have an executive team that can really drill those issues into our system.
Speak to that for a second, because the issue of hiring right is all, and every executive says that. You know, I've got great people around me. It took me forever to find them, but I found them, and now we're a well-oiled machine. But that's much easier said than done. And a couple of years ago, you built a whole new headquarters at Delaware and Chippewa here in Buffalo, and you know, from what you've told me, you've already almost outgrown it. So yeah. But you must have done it with the intent of only having X number of people there, but now you've got X times two or whatever. How did that evolve?
Well, you know, what's been happening is part of this equation as to how we do what we do and ensure we're doing what we've always done consistently in a fashion as we grow is to focus more on how we consolidate some of the back office and some of the, you know, the things that you want to take out of the hands of your operators, issues that really don't relate to their ability to serve the customer. So, you know, any sort of back office work, accounting work, HR, you know, all of that work is best handled centrally and then processed out. So what we've been doing is as we've sort of morphed into this focus on even greater and greater growth. I mean, who would have thunk, right? I mean, I can't imagine ever being, not where we are even, but where we know we're going to be in a few years. And so how do we set the systems and build the organization to do that? That means bringing people into corporate. That means building a stronger and more consistent corporate sort of organization and team. And that creates a lot of bodies in the building. It's very interesting. And there was a Buffalo News article about, oh, we eliminated 30 jobs. And I say, how can we eliminate 30 jobs when we can't even fit the people we need in our building? But what's happened is we have eliminated 30 positions, creating 40 to 50 new ones. And what we're doing is we're saying the work that's being done, you know, the data entry and sort of more basic blocking and tackling isn't adding value here. So let's get that out of this building and let's put the value creation in the building. So let's put people and bodies and jobs in place that are going to move the needle. So, you know, we ended up creating out here in Amherst. We added a call center originally because we moved our call center from California to Amherst. And that was, I think, about 50 jobs. And then we moved 40 to 50 of our human resources benefits administrators to that location as well. So we now have, in addition to close to 440 people in the office in Buffalo, we have another 100 or so in Amherst. And so we're busting at the seams. And you know, it's a good problem to have, right? So no complaints here, but we do have our challenges.
And that begs a question that I've asked many people in this community on this show and just in my conversations with them. You could put your company anywhere. I mean, and there may be advantages in putting it elsewhere. Yet you've kind of doubled down on your presence here in Western New York, and that's rare. It's very rare, certainly with a company your size. So what's the rationale?
Well, let me push back on that a little bit. We could put it anywhere. I mean, we're from here. We're Buffalonians, and we have no interest in leaving or changing our lives. But here's what I'm beginning to discover, and this is a new Buffalo. Right? It's in everything. You can't look back. You always got to look forward. Mm-hmm. But we're finding that there's a set of employees, and I think M&T might actually be experiencing this as well, where there's a group of employees. It's not the kids just graduating from college. It's the 30-somethings that are starting to get married and have kids. And where do they want to live, and where do they want to raise that family? And so what we're finding is these highly skilled individuals that are available and even wanting to move to Buffalo, New York because of the lifestyle that's here. And, you know, they may be taking a pay cut, but net-net their lifestyle improves dramatically. The cost of living changed quite a bit, and the housing and the education and the lifestyle for their family is, you know, is so much better that they're seeking us out, which is a new and unique sort of experience for us Buffalonians. But this has become a hot place to move to. It's a hip place. It doesn't sound like the Buffalo we grew up with, but that's where we are. So I'd say originally the decision to stay was out of loyalty to the region and out of just this sense that we're this. I always used to say Buffalo is not so much where we are as it is who we are, and that clearly drove that decision. But now that we're there, we've made that decision, we're thinking, why weren't we brilliant? Everyone wants to come to Buffalo. It really is a great place.
Well, I couldn't agree more. Obviously, that's why we're here too. And what you're saying is true. I've seen it with my own family, that my kids, like a lot of kids, grow up, go away to school, and a lot of times you figure you'll never see them here living here again. And now three of them have homes here, and the fourth would love to be here. So, and they've all got spouses and kids and stuff. So it's great to see, for all the reasons that you've said. They get it. They come back here and they see how relatively easy it is. And then they go back to New York or Washington and they struggle to go four blocks. And
it's brutal.
And it is brutal. And we're very fortunate along those lines.
Yeah, what is a Buffalo traffic jam is four cars at a stoplight. Yeah,
so. Or it's two changes, then you're ticked. You're violently upset. The thing about what you're saying, though, is something that really I struggle with as I listen to people in that age group that you're talking about, 30s and 40s, and they're very happy to be here. They feel productive. They feel they can do things for and with their family they couldn't do anywhere else, and it's exciting to see that. But you fast forward of 20 years or something, and maybe they spin off from Delaware North, form their own company, maybe they're a professional, and they start to accumulate some assets, and then they go to see their attorney, and their attorney says, "Well, gee, have you considered the tax liability that you now have, and how much that would change if you maybe bought a place down in Florida and figured out why to spend 6 months and a day there and kind of kept your nice house here, but really get your assets out of the state." Do you have that? Does that linger in your mind at all, that this generation that now is enjoying our community and the benefits of our community will succeed their way out of our community?
It's possible. I mean, my view is, look, the politics of New York State are sort of sedimentary. I mean, they've layered on over years and years and years. They've become the bedrock, and you're never going to shake that. Mm-hmm. So rather than trying to, disrupt that structure, find a counterweight. And so when I look at counterweights, I look at the medical campus, the university, the things that are creating opportunities that are unmatched elsewhere. So Florida may have, a tax-free state, tax-free environment. But do they have the opportunities to get involved with startups and with new and innovative concepts and businesses that I think are around the corner for Western New York? I think with the university and the medical campus sort of now in one place, sort of the School of Medicine in one place, we're going to start to see real interesting opportunities for new startup, new companies, new innovative and interesting things that I think the millennial crowd is really interested in. They love this type of.
And I couldn't agree more. And I want you to go to a break in a couple of minutes, but I want you, when we come back, I want you to go into some depth about what your family has done relative to our medical infrastructure in particular. And a couple of years ago, the study that you did called The Future of Medicine. Mm-hmm. Because in my mind, that really, I read it then and I haven't picked it up but once since then. But there's some remarkable things in there. And I just want you to touch on the highlights of that, because I think it's germane to what you're saying here. And the energy that's created by putting things that are complementary or even conflicting in some ways in the same place, and allowing that energy to be created that creates perhaps new businesses, as you describe.
Right.
I was down there. Well, we can touch on that a little later. I'm going to that. And there's another study that I'm going to ask you to talk about when you come back, which is the future of sports, because you touch on the medical, your involvement with the medical campus there, and I want you to elaborate on that quickly before we go to the break. Tell us how your family got so deeply involved in the in the medical campus?
Well, you know, it started. Dad's an alum of UB, and you know, he's a believer in the university as an economic engine for this region, and that it it's sort of a sea change vehicle that he's willing to invest in wherever he sees the opportunity. The medical campus was an opportunity that he saw as transformational in terms of not just the university and how it stands within the rankings of other universities in our country, but also how it can stimulate that kind of growth and innovation that he instinctively knows is going to lead to good things. You can't put your finger on where it's going to go, but you can sort of seed it and know that it's going to go somewhere. And that's really, I think, what he was all about. He wanted to be a part of it. He wanted to show his commitment. He's extremely proud to have been able to show his commitment to the, you know, gave away a bunch of my inheritance. I mean, really disturbed by
that's
that.
What parents do. Kind of scary sometimes. But we've got to go to break. But we come back from the break. I want you to be a little more specific on you know, what your family's done, in particular the medical school, the Jacobs Institute, and how those really lever what's happening in that part of town, which
sure.
which is really huge. And speaking of which, while we've got half a minute or so, the Jacobs Institute, how did that start?
The JI was really in recognition of my Uncle Larry, who was a brilliant scientist. He was a neurosurgeon, but he was also a brilliant scientist, researcher who you know, was developing drugs to treat MS, and he was extremely. I remember.
I'm going to have you hold that thought.
Yeah, don't ask the question.
Well, keep that memory in mind. We'll come right back with more from our house tears after these important messages.
This is Linda Malaya, president of Hunt Mortgage. The market continues to change from day to day, but one thing that hasn't changed since 1911 is our commitment to serve the needs of Western New York homebuyers. At Hunt Mortgage, we will always work to find our clients the best rate and home financing options available. Rates are rising, and now may be the very best time to buy or refinance your home before these low rates disappear.
Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome back to our house. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. HuntRealEstate.com is the only place in the web where you can find a complete inventory of homes available not just here in Buffalo, Niagara, but all across upstate and even out to Phoenix, Arizona. You'll also find access to a complete set of home ownership services at HuntRealEstate.com, which is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA. The show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage, and for more information about our many exclusive programs, including the one that allows you to roll the cost of home improvements into your mortgage, allowing you to effectively buy the before but live the after. And this is very important, because oftentimes you see a beautiful old home in Buffalo that you love, and or even in the suburbs someplace, and you fall in love with the woodwork and everything else, and then you go down the stairs in the basement and you see that the power panel was put in 1922, and the furnace is a big octopus, and you wonder, how am I going to handle this? Well, you can know up front through this program what you're going to be in for and roll the costs of all those improvements into your mortgage. Only available at Hunt Mortgage. That's the buy the before and live the after. 633-3700, and ask about our pre-purchase commitment while you've got one of our mortgage consultants on the phone. That's 633-3700. And if you just have a general inquiry about anything relative to real estate, call the Hunt Customer Service Center, the only one of its kind in North America, 633-9400, and ask our customer service reps anything you'd like to know about real estate. We'll either answer it right there on the phone or direct you to the appropriate professional for whatever it is, whether you're considering buying or selling a home, financing a home, insuring one, or even fixing up the one you have. And remember, our guarantee stands. Strongest guarantee in real estate, we will sell your home. Or ERA will buy it. That's the seller security plan, available only through a Hunt Real Estate ERA agent. Stop into one of our many open houses this weekend to learn more. I'm in the studio today with Jerry Jacobs Jr., the co-CEO with his brother Lou of Delaware North. We've been talking about not just what Delaware North is, which a lot of people, I'm sure, want to know, and we provided you with, Jerry did, some of the information about that, but also the greater involvement of Delaware North and its principals in our community, which I think is perhaps equally important. But before we get back to that, I'd like to remind you that if you'd like to call us here in the studio and ask a question of Mr. Jacobs or about real estate in general, call us here at 803-0930 or 1-800-616-9236 if you're long distance, and start 1-930 if you're mobile. And don't forget, you can also text us here at text 30930, and that's you can be anonymous and blast away if you'd like.
Thank you for that.
Yeah. We can always ignore them. That's the beauty of this thing. Anyway, you're talking about the Jacobs Institute before the break, Jerry, and I just want you to there's some very cool things happening there. We've had the chairman of the Institute on the show, Bill Maggio, so we've gone into some depth about it, but it's quite an interesting place. And you mentioned that it was founded in memory of your late uncle Larry, and what his really you're just talking about his research, which was world renowned.
Yeah, he was for those that knew Uncle Larry, he was brilliant. He had an amazing bedside manner, and he was the funniest guy you ever knew. I mean, he was such a blend between just, sheer brilliance and then just so much fun to be around. And so we always had a good chuckle whenever Uncle Larry was around. But, I remember at his funeral, he died, at the most unfortunate time. I mean, he was on the cusp of some pretty amazing discoveries. And when he died, I remember Dad saying at the funeral, "I will not let his genius be buried in that box." And he didn't. That was the reasoning behind let's create a center for collision between sort of the clinical work of medicine and research, and that which was really who Uncle Larry was. I mean, he was a guy who had a clinical profession and had sort of brought research to the equation and had created these amazing outcomes. And so that was the gist of it. And, we went back and forth with the university for a while and ultimately came up with a $10 million funding for this program that is a sort of a floor sandwich between research and clinical services at the hospital. So really, really an interesting time. And, mm-hmm. You talked about the future of medicine and why that, and why have we invested in that type of dialogue? And really, it comes from this belief we're sitting in a time when change is happening at exponential rates. And we talk about things like driverless vehicles, and yada yada yada. And people think, well, that'll never happen in my lifetime. I got news for you. It's not just going to happen in your lifetime. It's going to happen next year. Mm-hmm. So these things are happening so fast. So how do we get how do we, as a community, get in front of it and be the, instead of being the ones that are trying to catch up, let's be the disruptors. Let's be the ones that are bringing about change. And that's really what the dialogue's about. That's really what all of this is about. It's about recognizing the rate of change, the pace of change, and the resources it will take to be sort of in front of that and be a leader in that. And, in our minds, it's money well spent.
If you could highlight a few key takeaways from the future of medicine, what would they be? The study itself.
Yeah, Peter, here's the thing about that. Here's the fundamental thing to know about that. By the time the ink dries on that document, it's irrelevant. It's already shifting in another direction. And so the thing to keep in mind.
You point directions in there. You don't say this will happen by that date.
Yeah, no, I mean, but you're going to see more and more genetic engineering, more and more computer-based type or simulated artificial intelligence work that is going to shape the way and the ability to provide medical services for sure. But I'll tell you, here's a simple one. If you go into the university's medical school and you go into there, they have these operating rooms that are set up for, and instead of using cadavers, they're using these highly sophisticated models, human models, that can replicate the reaction of the body to what what a surgeon is doing. And so it's hard for me to describe. I'm a layman. I walk in there and think, cool. And that's about all I know about it. But it's fascinating what's happening. And they, you know, they have set up a process of a way of learning that has shifted from the textbook to the hands-on sort of environment where you are literally learning real time from experiences as you're being educated.
You know, I've been through the school a couple times, and you should take credit for the school itself, not just the Jacobs Institute. Obviously, it wouldn't be there if it wasn't for your family, and it's named obviously for your family, which is huge. But when I was there one time with Satish Tripathi, the president, and he was telling me about how medical schools, as you described, the pace of change has been so great. Most medical schools were built 40 years ago, the ones that are operating in this country.
And
ours is one of the few truly contemporary schools. Just elaborate on that a little bit, because just as you say, just even in the experiential part of for the student is so different there than it is at almost any other medical school.
It is. I mean, thank you. You just explained it. But here's the catch. Here's the reality. And I'm going to use the Boston Garden as an example. Not a good one, but I'm going to use it. If we don't keep investing and keep that venue on the forefront, it will very quickly fall behind. I remember, you know, and the Garden is a classic example. I could take other arenas that were open at the same time. The Garden continues to thrive as a leader in its industry because every year we pump more and more capital into improving and upgrading the venue, and it stays relevant, whereas others become old. And then at that point, it's almost impossible to catch up. At that point, you have to build a whole new arena. And so, mm-hmm. Similarly, if you look at the medical school, without continued reinvestment, without continued feeding of this, and continued innovation, it will fall behind. Do you remember, again, I'm sorry, but this is my world, so it's the easiest one for me to relate to, but when the new Comiskey Park opened in Chicago, it was the belle of the ball until 1 year later, it was a few months later, Camden Yards opened, and nobody talked about Comiskey. Mm-hmm. It was the old style, and this is the new, and it was gone. That very similar with these medical schools. If we don't continue to improve and invest and feed the resources necessary to keep it relevant and on the cutting edge, it's just a time that it will have that star and then it will pass.
Just a couple of weeks ago, we had one of the leaders of one of our insurers here in town on the show, and we're talking about just this thing in terms of the quality of medical care in this country, number one, and there's been some, I think, totally unjust criticism of the quality of care in this country. It's still the very best in the world. There's no question about it. And the very best research in the world is taking place in this country. But it's extremely expensive, extremely expensive. To do just what you're describing in just a, kind of the tip of the iceberg is hundreds of millions of dollars to keep a medical school. I know how much has already been invested in that medical school, and it's a staggering amount of money. So you're dealing with essentially a public institution, which means ultimately the taxpayers have to pony up a little bit. So how do you argue that case, I guess?
Well, I guess it's the never-ending fight for public dollars, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we spent a lot more Tesla than we did at the medical campus.
And that's right.
So
way more.
Where is the higher return for our community would be the question I challenge. I mean, I'm going to try and stay out of politics, but that would be the question I think should be asked, and where the yield is that best benefits the future of our community.
Mm-hmm. And that's a very interesting question, particularly in light of what's happened recently, last couple of weeks, to members of our community and other communities. And we'll be right back with more from our house tiers after these important messages.
This is Linda Malaya, president of Hunt Mortgage. The market continues to change from day to day, but one thing that hasn't changed since 1911 is our commitment to serve the needs of Western New York homebuyers. At Hunt Mortgage, we will always work to find our clients the best rate and home financing options available. Rates are rising, and now may be the very best time to buy or refinance your home before these low rates disappear.
Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome back to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and homeownership experience. Go there today. But look in the next couple of months where it's going to be all new again, and we have some very, I think, interesting, exciting things on tap for your real estate and homeownership experience online at HuntRealEstate.com coming up. But go there today. It's more than it you'll find anywhere else when it comes to your real estate experience. And the show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage, home of the pre-purchase commitment and low rate and closing cost guarantee, 633-3700. I'm in the studio today with Jerry Jacobs Jr., the co-CEO with his brother Lou of Delaware North Companies. There's a bunch of them. And we've been talking, I'm going to shift gears a little bit away from medicine now, because that could take the rest of the day. I want to go to sports, because sports is something that is obviously very, very important to our community. We're in love with our teams, and every community is. I mean, every time I go, we have 15 offices in Boston now. When I go there, you know, they're all over me about Boston, the sports teams, and everything else. And they're well aware of the fact that a Buffalo family owns the Bruins. They remind me of that all the time. I don't need to remind them. Anyway, it's a most interesting thing, because you've spoken in the past, and your study of the future of sports touched on this as well. The issue of a whole new type of sports experience. And this kind of, for those of us that are our age, it doesn't seem so relevant or vital, but to a lot of people it is. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about that.
So, okay, I think where you're going with this, but so there are many things emerging in our professional sports world as we speak. I mean, we now have a sports book, legal sports book in the United States. We have things like esports, which is basically video games, and, you know, we refer to them as athletes. Just the esports, we might shrug off, but I can tell you, for their championship games of League of Legends, 44 million viewers. I mean, more than the NBA championships, or more than the State of the Union or the inauguration. I mean, these are staggering numbers. They're spread out around the globe, so it's hard to monetize that particular market. But so esports is a big big thing, and you know, there's the sort of the math of it, which is, you know, look at the size of this market and can I monetize it, and then there's the exuberance, which is what's driving the value of these things. But I can tell you also, with esports, when you try to buy a team or negotiate a deal, you realize very quickly you're negotiating with children, and it's
really
a very hard it's a very difficult environment. So I think there's some time yet for that to mature. But the gaming side of it is, I think, going to be really important to the future of some of these sports, the four majors in particular, plus MLS at this point. And it's not the money. It's not the gaming money. It's a very mature market, but the dollars are significant, but not huge. The real value, the real opportunity here is fan engagement. It's the, think about, fantasy sports and the red zone on steroids. And just the level of engagement that occurs when you can bet on, you know, the next pitch, or who's going to, you know, or the overtime, or who's going to get the next goal, who's going to get the next penalty. And then the level of engagement is just extraordinary in terms of how people are watching the game and how deep they are into the game.
And the speed.
The speed, and even, you know, so then you get, you know, you get some teams that don't draw, but suddenly they're relevant. Suddenly, because there's a game and I can go bet on it, yeah, it's going to be fun. This is going to be fun. I'm going to bet with my buddies. We're going to, you know. So that's where the real value, in my view, lies.
Do the leagues have to license all that stuff, or can the whole economy kind of loop right around the NHL, for example?
Well, you just stepped in a big pile of something. That's been going on. That's a really interesting question. I believe at the end of the day, the leagues will get a hold of this and find a way to have a controlling say in it. But right now, the way it's happening is state by state. They're writing the regs. They're writing the rules. Some states are talking to the leagues. Some states aren't. Some leagues don't want to talk about it. NFL doesn't know what to do. I mean, they have fought gaming for their entire existence, and now all of a sudden, it's there for them to take. There's a lot of complications emerging around this, and we'll see how this all settles out. But I believe in the end, the leagues will get a piece.
My understanding of the NFL's issue is that it's kind of a moral issue. an argument becomes a little bit moral.
Well, yeah, they're about the integrity of the game, right? So they made the Rooneys separate their business so that they could had no interest in gaming. When we talked to the NFL about the Bills, they said no gaming, no way, no how, which means no Delaware North, no Jacobs, and so you know that was their vigilant sort of view of how it had to be. Mm-hmm. Meantime, you know, illegally and offshore, people have been betting on the NFL for you know since its existence, and it's probably one of the most bet on sports there are. But it's not the elixir. Don't forget, there's only you know so many games in a season. MLB, NBA, NHL, many more games than NFL. So in terms of a monetary size, it's not quite as big as the others.
The talk in the retail world right now, shifting gears a little bit, is that the real shift in the retail world has taken place along the same lines as we're talking about relative to sports and even medicine. And that is that the proliferation of information, the speed of the exchange of information, has brought the price of everything way down. Mm-hmm. Because if I want to buy a shirt, for example, I can go to Amazon or I can go to 50 other sites and I can have them compete effectively for my business. Everyone throwing a cookie in.
Right.
If I can put a code in the right way on the bottom of the order form online. So this is, and they say anyway, that this is one of the main reasons why inflation is in check right now. You mentioned how much you have to invest in the garden, for example, and the other investments you're making. That takes real money. And somehow there's got to be a return to the owners of the teams for that kind of investment, or the municipality, for that matter, through taxes in some way, shape, or form. Could that be commoditized too, or is this future sports thing going to change all that so that people don't even need to go to the garden? And
well, there's two theories on that. One of the future sport articles came out and said you need to build smaller venues. Fewer people are going to show up with the devices. They'll stay up on the game and they won't be going to the venue to watch it. Another theory is you need to build bigger venues because people are human beings seek company and excitement and they want
to experience
the experience,
the physical experience.
So I tend to believe in the latter. I think that we're starved for entertainment, and you know this satisfaction we get from our devices is sort of shallow. It's empty, and I think people really want to be. Look at what happens during the playoffs in any sport. And they'll go back to the home of the team that's the visiting team. They'll go back to their home venue, and there'll be people in the parking lot watching it on a screen because they want to go be together. They want to cheer. They want to high five. They want the energy and the excitement. I think that's the truth about human nature and spectators in sports. Part of the energy is being there and the vibe you pick up at the moment. So, you know,
That may be unique, frankly, to sports or venues like that, because that's not the case for a retail experience for the most part,
right. Except
for the fact that people still like to see other people when they go to the mall.
Yeah.
What's the number one thing people say about going to a mall? People watching. Really. And so yeah, I could buy everything I could get at the Galleria online, but I'm not going to see any people.
Well, so we started this conversation. I said there were three kinds of companies: procurement companies, food companies, and hospitality business. We're a hospitality business. We're about people, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when you say commoditizing, that scares me because, mm-hmm. you know, if I can get whatever I want online, I don't need this hospitality element. I tend to believe that that's not the case, that people are seeking that kind of engagement.
But to get their engagement, the price differential is pretty substantial. If I want to watch the game at the Bruins at home on television, I'm already paying my cable bill, but it's effectively pennies to watch it. I got to get in my car. I got to pay a fairly large dollar for the ticket. I got to go and maybe I want that human experience. Maybe I just don't want to hassle with anybody. But if I'm willing to take the hassle, I got the hassle that I've got to be concerned. I got to park my car and all that other stuff. So, I mean, do you have any concern about just the gulf that's being created by the efficiency and cost reduction that's been built into the internet world versus the experiential world and actually going there face-to-face?
Yeah. I mean, we lose sleep over that all the time. In the same breath, I mean, we're at $50 to park at the garden for a game. I mean, it's staggering. you know, people talk about our beers being overpriced. And the parking lot's full, you know, and our food and beverage, the prices are high. And players are making fortunes. I can tell you the team owners aren't. But, you know, as long as it's a little bit of that Adam Smith, I mean, as long as the places are filling and the venues, what people want is as long as they get what they want, which is that exciting, you know, that involvement that in something exciting and thrilling like sports, you know, which is, you know, Dick Ebersol always described it as unscripted drama. That's, you know, that's what Americans particularly love is that unscripted drama. And you know, as long as they can get that. I mean, look at Buffalo. Buffalo, you know, they go on a 10-game winning streak, the Sabres, and the place is packed. And the energy in the building was astounding. You couldn't miss those games. You had to be there. Mm-hmm. You couldn't watch the score on your phone. You had to be there.
That's right.
And that's powerful. That's extremely powerful.
It is powerful, and I'm glad it is, because I think it among other things that I don't know about you, but I'm not so much today, but years ago as we were coming out of the Super Bowl years, if we won on Sunday, Buffalo was a different place on Monday.
It really was. Yeah, the office and everything. The secretaries are on Zumbas. You're like, oh, please don't. You know?
And everybody's having Buffalo Bills days that coming in and all decked out and that silly stuff. But it is different. And that is the human experience that you can't get staring at a screen. And I think that – but yet at the same time, I mean, this one guy on one of the financial news programs this week was talking about – he was describing – in quite detail, the net effect of the retail experience on the retail experience. And then we're talking about office space, which is near and dear to my heart, retail space, that we have 23 square feet per person retail space in this country, per human being in this country. It's about 12 square feet in Europe. And it goes, and we're double any place else.
And it's about to get bigger.
It's about to get bigger. Yeah.
I mean, look at what's happening is the real estate is becoming worth more than the store. So you know, you're thinking about Macy's in Manhattan.
Yeah,
the real estate's worth more than the company.
That's right.
You know,
that's right. It's a scary thought, but I wish we had another hour to go into all this. As we approach the holidays, Jerry, what would be a message you'd want to leave with our listeners relative to, you know, your business? I mean. How important are the holidays, for example, to Delaware North?
Well, I mean, I just actually said this yesterday at our company celebration. But, you know, we're about family. We're a family-owned business. We look at the Delaware North family. Mm-hmm. We love having people as members of that family and being proud members of that family. And so the holidays are a real important time for us to remind ourselves and our associates of that bond. And the value of that bond. It's more than just a job. It's a career. It's an involvement in something bigger than yourself, and it's an exciting time. So, and then on the other side, I'll tell you that company that I referenced, Patina Restaurant Group, 30% of their EBITDA in the month of December. They do 30%. And so long as it doesn't rain, we're good. But, you know, it's an important season for us, too, for business purposes as well.
Well, the ski resorts, I don't think you own a ski resort.
No.
Probably with good reason. But 20% of the revenue is in 1 week, whole year, which is...
Well, and having, you know, getting Thanksgiving obviously is huge. Christmas is great, too. I mean, those are not typically good times for them, so...
Jerry Jacobs, Jr., co-CEO of Delaware North, thank you for being with us this morning.
It's my pleasure.
I'd like to thank our listeners. We'll be back at the same time next week. And remember, when it comes to real estate, all of Western New York and all of upstate is Hunt Country.